Tuesday, April 18th. It is very hard to work here at the ranch when Lyndon is here. There are more interesting, more demanding things to do. This day, I woke early and recorded and signed mail and telephoned Liz and Walt Rostow. It was nearly 10 when Lyndon delivered me the ultimatum to join him in a few minutes, and so I dressed hurriedly and got in the car with the top down with Don and Jesse and Pat. And we toured the ranches, rejoicing in the fresh feeling of a little rain last night. It had not been enough. It was disappointing. But even 0.64 inches was cause for rejoicing, and there are still clouds in the sky. Yesterday, I had called Richard Myrick, the landscape architect in Dallas, wanting to make an appointment, and had found to my delight that he was coming out this morning to Minnibell Heap's ranch. He suggested driving on over, so I had an appointment with him about 11 o'clock, with Roy White coming to lean on and advise. We were still out when they came. We made a brief stop at Cousin Oriole's. She was not there. We left her a note. And then we got word over the talking machine that the Claybergs were arriving. Mr. Bob Clayberg of the King Ranch had called and wanted an appointment with Lyndon this morning. We were expecting him a little past 12. He flew in at 11:30, and we went out to the airport to meet him and his nephew, Peter Larkin, with his Boston wife, crisp and handsome, perfectly turned out, even with a hat, and our old friend, Gus Wortham. Another nephew, B.K. Johnson, had arrived in a separate plane a few minutes earlier. It was an interesting entourage. The power structure of the fabulous King Ranch, which is branched into so many things, research, tourism, cattle ranches from Cuba to Australia to South America, a romantic phenomena from a Texas landscape, which Lyndon remembers affectionately, nostalgically, from the days when he was Mr. Dick's secretary, about 1932 to 35. He was working for Mr. Dick when we married. I remember so well his car, which was upholstered in leather with the Running W brand, a gift from his boss, the upholstery, that is. And he had taken me to see Mr. Dick right after he had taken me to see his mother and father, probably about the second day after we met. We'd gone out to the King Ranch, and I'd met Mr. Dick's mother, also Mr. Bob's. She's almost a legend now, a woman of great presence and wisdom, and as impressive as royalty. We took them back to the ranch house, and I took Mrs. Larkin in and introduced her to Lucy, with the apology that I had to do my landscape work with Mr. Myrick and Roy White. So Lucy, I hope, showed her the house and made her feel at home, while Lyndon took Mr. Bob and Peter Larkin and B.K. Johnson and Gus Wortham and a bronco around the ranch. Meanwhile, Roy had showed Mr. Myrick the plans for the addition, and so I circled the house with them and told them what I hoped the view from my window would be like someday. We discussed the possibilities of where to move the carports, but the need for some service area in the back, the imperative of a good trash disposal, preferably an incinerator. We've struggled so long with the most primitive disposal methods as we've expanded and expanded and become almost a community here rather than a household. And we surveyed Mr. Klein's new kingdom and talked about removing his old one. We got James in tow and asked his advice on everything. And I complimented Mr. Myrick on the accomplishments of about, was it 2 years ago? The new sidewalk on the west side of Sisterdale limestone rippled, and also paralleling the fence where the cars drive up to park. We've almost broken them of driving in the back, and the stone curbing that curves around in front of the house, leaving a clear grass area from the rail fence down to the road, one of the nicest improvements. And then the little apron of stone at the front gate, functional and pleasant. Like all the marks of what we did when we worked together before, they have been proved in use. And then, very quickly, it was time for lunch. We went in and had a hurried Bloody Mary and introductions all around, and then sat down at the table. A.W. had joined us, about 12 of us with Lucy and staff at the other table, and had a real country lunch, a fried steak. I had Gus Wortham on my right and B.K. Johnson on my left, and Lyndon, Mr. Bob on his right, and Mrs. Larkin on his left. I talked to B.K. about the self-guided tour that the King Ranch has initiated. The public is admitted to a portion of the ranch. They have a pamphlet which shows them as they walk, maybe ride around, pens where the Santa Gertrudis are being fed or doctored, or areas where grass seeds are being experimented with or grown. Maybe that's where the KR Blue Stem came from. And in the great main house, he says more than 100,000 people per year come. In the great main house itself, all the nephews have a room there, quarters, but nobody really lives there. They use it for the visiting of important people, and then the nephews take turns coming down playing host. I gather it's young Dick Clayburgh and the Peter Larkins and B.K. Johnsons. The power is still concentrated in Mr. Bob. Apparently little of it is really funneled to the nephews. It was a very interesting thing for me to compare. Great wealth is exercised by this family and by, for instance, the Rockefellers. It was only Sunday, 2 days ago. That gentle-mannered, imaginative, hard-working, most remarkable man and Mary had been out for Sunday dinner with five of his conservationist friends, Connie Worth and the Prendergast and the Fagin Dixons of Austin. In the brief ride when I was with Mr. Bob and their party and we had passed the cemetery, I had started to tell them about it, how many members of the family were buried there and so forth. And he had stopped me in mid-sentence to tell me a very interesting and poignant thing, that when he had lost Helen, his wife, he had buried her in the pasture. I had gathered it was one they knew and loved together, where he had built a lake for her, and that he had had an architect from Mexico come out and design a chapel, which would soon be built. This adds to the legend. Right after lunch, I said goodbye to Lucy, the last time until I returned to help her move, hopefully around the 1st of May. And then Lyndon left to take Mr. Bob and his party to the plane. And I continued my working trip with Mr. Marek and Roy White. We went to the cemetery and the birthplace and discussed the goods and the bads of what had been done and made plans for the use of some of the shrubs that had been taken up in preparing for the addition. We had James and Mr. Klein with us to help work on the service problems and the parking problems. And then I left Mr. Marek to do his measuring and confer with Roy with plans to meet again sometime probably around the 1st of May. Lyndon was off riding with B.K. and A.W., and there was one of those little islands of time when I could do whatever I chose. I made some calls. Cynthia Crider Crofts, whose husband George is in the hospital at Johnson City, seriously ill. She and all her brothers are the Crider family, a full 10 of them, friends of Lyndon's since he was about 6 or 8 years old. And Jessie Hunter, she's just about to finish her cancer treatments in Houston and will be returning in 2 or 3 days, hopefully out from under the shadow. We talked of opening up the birthplace house for 1, possibly 2 months in the summer, and I told her Betty and I had discussed it. I think we'll begin right after July the 4th weekend and probably stop short of the Labor Day weekend. That way, maybe we'll be there only once, necessitating the closing of the house, and that is Lyndon's birthday. I called Winnie Smith about the Mexican who is now working at the boyhood home. I must find someone to help James, who does a good job with so much. And then, most delightfully, I took a long walk in the grove of trees in front of the house beside the river, down to the dam, carrying a book, stopped at the little knoll where that we've had a table and chairs, hopefully for a picnic. It was an inviting spot, but there was one that beckoned even more, a rock with a tree right behind it where I could lean back and sit and look at the river and do nothing except watch for a duck or a nutria and read my book, The Secret of Santa Vittoria. It's one of the most pleasant things to shift the gears into neutral and do nothing, and just sit. After a while, I went back to the main house, and this time went up to a favorite spot I'd been waiting to sit in for ages. That is, the front porch, second floor. A wonderful view of the river and across to the road. Just the spot for that second cup of coffee in the morning, or a bridge game in the afternoon, but somehow almost never used. And James came up, and we talked about all the things that ought to be done in the yard sometime. It's absolutely irreplaceable. And then I joined Lyndon and A.W., and we rode around the ranches as as sundown approached. There was the freshness and the hope after the rain, and the little lambs fairly danced in the road. And it was the time of fireflies and the sisseltail flycatcher doing their ballets, and several times we saw little quails crossing the road. Once a skunk, and I was motionless and did not mention him, because skunk and ringtails and raccoons are in peril these days for eating turkey eggs. There was that delicious feeling of brevity and goodbye, because as soon as dark had really fallen, we knew we'd be heading home to the ranch to dinner and then the plane for Washington. Dale joined us. We looked at the tanks to see how they were holding water. The tank at the north end of our original line, joining Leela's, is almost a success story for the first time in its existence. The tank in the Reagan is marvelously full, but whether we will hold or not, we do not know. The Martin is gloriously full of deer. They're still a little ragged. It's time to shed their coats. But the horns are beginning to grow in velvet, and they look fatter than a month ago. Soon there will be some fawns. That will be fun to watch. Dark drove us back to the ranch house, and we sat down to a Mexican dinner. I thought of Lindbergh saying, if you're going to be a bear, you might as well be a grizzly. So we all ate heartily. And a little after 8, left in the Jetstar, our last words to Dale and James to get us some rain before we came back, were joined at Randolph by Linda and flew into Washington. I thought we would get up a bridge game, but I did not have the vitality. How dull at 9 o'clock. So I lay down and had a rub and drifted half between sleep and waking. We were at Andrews a little past 12, Washington time, and then helicoptered in to the White House lawn where the dogs were waiting for us. All except Blanco, who is not at home in this world, that poor high-strung aristocrat, had bitten one of the little beagles rather badly. But they all seemed happy and none the worse for it. Only Mr. Bryant was mad about it. And then we came in, and there was a huge stack of night reading on the bed for Lyndon, and I, quite awake now, read the papers and Time and my accumulated mail, and finally, after 2, turned over and said goodbye to the day. But next morning, Lyndon told me it was after 3 when he turned the light off.